This audio is brought to you by MuslimCentral.com.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Life of Imam Bukhari.
Life at Basra, where he had no hair on his face. He was a young boy, and people in Basra. Imam Bukhari was known when he was young, and they used to run after him. While he was young, run after him. Please, حدثنا يا شيخ, حدثنا يا شيخ. And he would say, not yet, not yet, not now, not now. And they will force him to sit on the floor.
Presented by Dr. Hisham Al-Awadi.
I'm here begging you to listen to me. They were begging the sheikh, knocking, jumping from the windows. Please, حدثنا, حدثنا. And then he would sit down. Then
produced by Message of Islam.
إن الحمد لله نحمده ونستعينه ونستهديه ونستغفره. ونعوذ بالله من شرور أنفسنا ومن سيئات أعمالنا من يهد الله فهو المهتد ومن يضلل فلن تجد له وليا مرشدا وأشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وحده لا شريك له وأشهد أن محمدا عبد الله ورسوله أدى الأمانة وبلغ الرسالة ونصح لهذه الأمة فصلاة الله وسلامه عليه. Teachers and students of Imam al-Bukhari, and again, teachers and students in the sciences of hadith are important because they tell me something about the chain of narration. But this might not be relevant to us here. So if I tell you that the Sheikh of Imam Bukhari was Al-Imam Abu al-Walid Ahmed ibn Muhammad al-Azruqi, might not make sense to you. So how do we resurrect, so to speak, those people and make them make sense? Well, through looking at them as role models to this great personality called Imam Bukhari. You see, the relationship between the character and the sheikh is not just based on me sitting with him and learning hadith, hadith, hadith. Otherwise, I could just have his voice recorded and take it home and listen to it. No, it's about learning about how this hadith is being practiced in the real world through the character of my sheikh. So the sheikh here actually becomes an institution of tarbiyah, an institution that contributes in bringing up the individual, that complements the role of the household. Do you understand? So if you are an imam, or if you are Imam Bukhari, what's happening to you? You are a genius, you are a talented person, but that is not enough. So we need a decent household. Okay, the father dies, there is a supportive mother. But then you travel in Mecca. You travel to Mecca. The mother is not anymore with you. But there are shuyukh that are acting like your mother and acting like your father. They are supporting you. So they continue the process of maturing you, teaching you, educating you, not just intellectually, but spiritually. You accompany them. You sleep with them. You talk to them. You eat with them. Our relationship, this what has been happening today, conference, and we go together and eat together. This was happening at a normal basis between Bukhari and his shuyukh. You see, it's not like salam alaikum, I'll see you next month or next year. No, I will see you after Salat al-Maghrib, after Salat al-Isha, etc. So this is number one. But this is not the entire story. The entire story is that that person called Bukhari then becomes a sheikh to students and carries forward to the students the values that he have internalized from his shuyukh. So the process of learning is inherited through generation, not through books, conferences, and Islamic society meetings, but through real human being, real institution, real household plus shuyukh. Okay? That's why looking then at the shuyukh and the students of Imam Bukhari does not become then a hadithi endeavor, does not become an endeavor to talk about chain of narration. This is for muhaddithin, this is not for the common people. And with all due respect, we are all common people. So I'm not fascinated or I'm not interested about whether he was called Walid or Muhammad, or in our case, Yazid or Abi Yazid. But what did he learn from Yazid or Abi Yazid? So, teachers and students. Now, what are the themes that I'm going to focus on with regards to the things, the values, the lessons that he learned from his shuyukh? Of course, I don't want to give the impression that before that he was ignorant of these things. But to see them practiced, materializing in the personality, this gives them more legitimacy and more effect. So the themes, the values that he learned was, this is what we will discuss in this lecture, concern for knowledge, eagerness for knowledge, humbleness when learning and when teaching, care about parents. You know what this has to do with the, you will see, services to society. People are sitting in the mosque are not a group of a bunch of greedy people who just want to learn. No, no, they are contributing to society. Society actually feels the effect and impact of them meeting in private or in secret in a mosque. They see it because then they see Imam Bukhari coming and, you know, carrying the bricks over his head. This is service to society. Students. I will discuss three students. Imam Muslim, who was a faithful student to Imam Bukhari, as I explained. Imam Bukhari is older than Imam Muslim. Muslim, representing a case of someone who lived and died for the sake of Allah and for the sake of Islam. And I will talk about that. I will talk briefly about Imam Tirmidhi and his fear of Allah. I will talk about Imam Nasa'i, a martyr in Jerusalem. You see, I'm focusing about things that are not necessarily immediately identified with those people who are always being considered as muhaddithin. So I expect you to say powerful memory, journey for the sake of knowledge. No, no. I'm going to focus on things that make them relevant to you. And then you can say that Imam Nasa'i has got something to offer me other than his powerful memory, because I have not been blessed with that ni'mah or with that talent. Let me immediately tell you that Imam Bukhari had over 20,000 students on average that attended his daily circle. And he had three dictators. Three dictators. One sits a mile, the other sits 2 miles, and I don't know how many, 20,000, how many miles you have to sit, but three dictators actually saying. And that one at the end of the circle, when he writes down, he says, حدثنا البخاري, not the dictator. The dictator is Muhammad or Ahmed, I don't care. And of course, dictators had to, there are sciences of dictators. Not anyone can just sit and say, you can do this in Salah. When the Imam says, Allahu Akbar, you say Allahu Akbar, or Allahu Akbar, Sami Allahu liman hamid, but not in Hadith. You have to be intelligent. You have to know the chain of narration. So, if a scholar says, حدثنا جماعة, a group of scholars told, narrated this Hadith. Jama'a in Hadith means a group of people that are known. Yeah, like for example, if Sufyan and Ahmed and Yahya have taught you this Hadith, you don't say Ahmed, Yahya, Sufyan. You say Jama'a. The dictator has to say Sufyan and Ahmed and Yahya for those who don't know what Jama'a stands for. So the dictator is not someone who just plagiarizes and copies what you say. And at the back, you say حدثنا البخاري, Al-Bukhari told us, even though you never heard Al-Bukhari speak. But Bukhari spoke. Anyway, this is, you might say, trivial. But just to give you a sense of what was going on, so that when you come across a book of Hadith, you have got an appreciation of the very language that was used. Now, 20,000 students, on average, hearing Al-Imam Al-Bukhari speak, and those who have heard Sahih Al-Bukhari from the mouth of Imam Bukhari were 90,000. And these were blessed to hear Bukhari talking about Sahih al-Jama'. You read it now, probably in translation, but they heard it, 90,000. And in fact, one scholar called Al-Farbari, one of the students of Imam Bukhari, is proud to say that I heard from the mouth of Imam Bukhari, my sheikh, with 90,000 students, I heard the Bukhari from his mouth. All are dead except me. See, this is source of pride, of course. Now his sheikh have been numbered by him to be 1,080. So Imam Bukhari met 1,080 human beings. And you might say, is that all? Look, he's not meeting anyone. He's not meeting any sheikh. He's not meeting the imam of the mosque. He's not meeting a faqih. No, no. He has to meet a particular sheikh in hadith that he thinks is trustworthy. Otherwise, they are in the market available in thousands. No, no, I'm looking for good quality shuyukh. 1,080. And I look at these shuyukh as 1,080 books, 1,080 institution, 1,080 role model, 1,080 teacher in morals, in akhlaq, not just in memory. Always bear this in mind. We are not talking about robots memorizing. No, we are talking about human beings moving on earth with the hadith of Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. At the age of 16, he was in Mecca, and he met many shuyukh. Again, these are the names. They might not be useful for you, but for the sake of the recording, Al-Imam Abu al-Walid Ahmed ibn Muhammad al-Azruqi. I will mention them very quickly so that you don't write them down. Abdullah ibn Yazid, Ismail ibn Salim al-Sayyikh, and the list goes on and on and on. I had a long list, but I thought, just to give you a gist of three or four. Then he went to Medina at the age of 18. He met Ibrahim ibn al-Mundhir al-Hazami, Mutarraf ibn Abdullah, Ibrahim ibn Hamza. Then he went to Basra. Four times he visited Basra. And he arrived at Basra where he had no hair on his face, meaning that he was a young boy. And people in Basra received him as a hero because Imam Bukhari was known even when he was young. And they used to run after him while he was young. Run after him. Please, hadithna ya sheikh, hadithna ya sheikh. And he would say, not yet, not yet, not now, not now. And they will force him to sit on the floor. Look at the brothers, look at, I'm here begging you to listen to me. Back home, or at that, they were begging the sheikh. Mobiles, texts, knocking, jumping from the windows. Please, hadithna, hadithna. And then he would sit down, and then you hadithum. And if he gives you one hadith, you are honored. And then he meets his shuyukh, Abi Asim al-Nabil, Safwan ibn Isa, Sulaiman ibn Harb. And then I thought I will give you just the gist of these names and some of the personalities. Sulaiman ibn Harb, for example. It could might be any name, but unless we actually give some background, it will not be any name. And then when you hear in the future Sulaiman ibn Harb, you will raise your hat and stand out of respect. من كبار أئمة زمانه قوي الذاكرة روى 10,000 كتاب حديث دون أن يمسك بكتاب. Great scholar, master of his time, powerful memory, he narrated 10,000 hadith at once with his memory. By the way, from now on, you will hear thousands many times. You will hear thousands from his memory many times. You might be shocked at the beginning of the lecture when I said he narrated 70,000. Okay, but now you will hear hundreds of thousands. So don't open your mouth. يعني get used to it. يحضر مجلسه 40,000. His circle, Sulaiman ibn Harb, that me and you might not know. We never heard of him. يحضر مجلسه 40,000. 40,000 attend his circle. Don't tell me many discs and microphone. Don't tell me buy tickets to book your place to avoid disappointment. Don't tell me give me 1 month notice to book the hall and to print the posters. No. Tomorrow I need 40,000 people. Those people were dangerous people. Yani they can topple an entire village in one day. Muhaddithin were very dangerous people. And khalq al-Qur'an, I want to jump into that. The fitna of the creation of the Qur'an. Why did it attack those muhaddithin? Because they were powerful people. Anyway. So al-Bukhari used to attend among these 40,000 people. And if you came during that circle, you will see 40,000. You will not, of course, see where is Bukhari. Quite young. But he was the only person who would sit down and listen. Everyone has got his notes. Everyone has got paper and pen and writing down. Yes, they do memorize afterwards. Go home and memorize. But it's difficult to find someone who memorizes from the beginning. This is a photographic memory. And in one occasion, he came and sat for 2 weeks, for 15 days. And at that time, 15,000 hadith was narrated by Sheikh Sulaiman ibn Harb. That means that on average, how many hadiths a day? 1,000. So the Sheikh, when I say to you that the Sheikh is not scratching his head, or is not saying you have a break, or not saying giving a hadith and half an hour commentary on the hadith. No. Hadith after hadith after hadith. Haddathana, haddathana, haddathana. And if you talk about 15,000 hadith, we are talking about 100,000 names. Chain of narration, are you awake? Okay, please be awake. So, everyone is writing for 15 days, except Imam Bukhari. And some of the students look again at the concern and the care that the students, anxiety for knowledge, love for knowledge. They said, Ya Bukhari, not Ya Imam, because he is a colleague. Ya Bukhari, you come every day without your pen or without your paper, and we come and write all the notes, etc., all the hadith. What have you learned? He said, do you want me to narrate what we have learned since 2 weeks ago, and he narrated on the spot on that day 15,000 hadith, to the extent that some students actually copied some hadith wrong, got the names wrong, so they corrected it based on his narration. And then he says, أَتَرَوْنَ أَنِّي أَخْتَلِفُ هَدْرًا وَأُضَيِّعُ أَيَّامِي. Do you think that I attend just to waste my time? Of course not, because there is a computer here registering everything. Then he goes to Kufa, travels to Kufa, and again meets teachers like Ubaydullah ibn Musa, Ahmed ibn Yaqub, Ismail ibn Aban, Al-Hasan ibn Rabi'a, Khalid ibn Makhlid, Sa'id ibn Hafs, Umar ibn Hafs. To me, Umar ibn Hafs is like Hafs ibn Umar, doesn't make any difference. To Imam Bukhari, he's seen him, he met him, he spoke to him, he heard him, he interacted with them. Imam Bukhari could be sitting here doing a one-day course about any of these people. And maybe you will not attend the talk because you never heard about Ismail ibn Aban. You all came because it's about Imam Bukhari. But you will not come to hear about Al-Hasan. Who's Al-Hasan al-Rabi'a? Does he live in Whitechapel or what? Khalid ibn Makhlid, Sa'id ibn Hafs, Umar ibn Hafs. Then he goes to Baghdad. He went to Baghdad 8 times, for obvious reasons. Baghdad was the center, the capital of the Abbasite Caliphate. Baghdad, during his time, was the center of the sciences and the knowledge, not just of hadith, of fiqh. That's why Imam Ahmad Hanbal was based in Baghdad. Baghdad, at that time, was the center of civilization. During that time, the city of Baghdad had 900 practicing medics. That excludes the medics or the doctors of the Khalifa or the rulers. Those are private. In thousands. Those are private. Graduates of Oxford and Cambridge. But the rest, who have got ijazah to practice on the common people, they were 900. Other than those who are practicing without ijazah. Do you want a joke? It might come in the wrong time, but this is in that book, one person wanted to kid the society, kid the people and say, I'm a medical doctor. So he went to his house, and he said to his wife, I'm going to wear this big, massive turban. Because this was the image of a medical doctor in Baghdad. So he wore this massive. And he began to say, I'm a doctor. Anyone who is ill, I can treat him, etc. And one girl, she had, an epidemic disease or something. And I don't know what he gave her, something just out of luck. And she was healed. And the news spread that there is a genius medical doctor in the city. So much so that the ruler actually asked for him, the Khalifa, and he brought him. The private doctors of that ruler said to him, he's a liar, we know him, he's not a medical doctor. He makes bread and plumbing and... He said, no, he healed this girl and it apparently he even healed the ruler by mistake. And then they said to him, this is in that book, Kitab al-Athqiya, because he was very intelligent. Stupid intelligent. Intelligent without meaning to be intelligent. So he actually, they said to him, okay, the ruler said to the medics, okay, we will see whether he is a genuine medical. I believe that he's a genuine medical, but just to prove to you, they said, okay, what are you going to do? He said, okay, we will make him visit this hospital in Baghdad, and let's see whether he will be able to treat everyone or not. I think that he will make every person who's staying in that hospital just leave the hospital because he will be healed. So they brought him. And they said, okay, you are going to go to this hospital, go over all the ill people. It seems that it was an NHS hospital. There were lots of ill people waiting for medication for the last 2 years. So he went there to heal them. And then they shut the door. They said, okay, let's see what you will do. And then he had a private conversation with all the ill people. He said, you want to be treated? They said, oh, yes, we want to be treated. He brought a big pan, very deep as well, and filled it with oil. And burned and began to heat the oil. The oil became boiling. And he said to all those ill people, your cure is to go inside this pan. And they thought that he's a medical doctor. So they said, everyone then said to him, what are you saying? They said, you go in that pan and you will be excellent. Believe me, you have asthma, you have a flu, just go inside this pan and you will be excellent. And everyone then began to say to him, No, I thought I had a flu, but I'm okay, I'm getting better. He said, Are you sure? They said, Yes. He said, okay, you can leave now. But when you leave, you will see policemen outside and the ruler is outside waiting for you. And you say to him, we've been cured. They said, of course, we will do so. And they went outside the hospital and said, we have been cured. The ruler was, of course, happy. The medical doctors were shocked. How did he make it? Anyway, this is in this book. This was Baghdad. Just to tell you, when Bukhari comes into Baghdad, there are lots of crazy people. And Baghdad, of course, had Ahmed ibn Hanbal. And al-Bukhari was a friend of Ahmed ibn Hanbal, and Ahmed ibn Hanbal loved very much al-Bukhari, so much so that he persuaded al-Bukhari to stay and reside in Baghdad. He said, how come a genius like you would travel all over, just stay in Baghdad and benefit the people. Look at the scholars and the lack of envy. Not go get outside Baghdad, you are pulling the crowd, the cameras, the press. No, stay, we need you. And Imam Bukhari, actually, when he was abused by his society in Bukhara, he said, I wish I took seriously the advice of Ahmed Hanbal and stayed in Baghdad. People might have valued me more. And then he traveled to Asham, Greater Syria, met Muhammad ibn Yusuf al-Faryabi. This is the Faryabi that I told you, that he listened to Sahih al-Bukhari, and he says, I'm the only survivor. Ibn Nadr Ishaq ibn Ibrahim, Adam ibn Abi Iyas, familiar? The person that when Bukhari went to meet in Sham, he had to eat leaves. Abi al-Yaman al-Hakam ibn Nafi'. Then he went to Egypt and met Hayat ibn Shuraih, Uthman ibn Salih, Sa'id ibn Abi Ibrahim, and the list goes on and on and on to make 1,080 people. Now, what did he learn from these people? How did these people influence Imam Bukhari? Or even how? Tell us something about these people. Well, in Egypt, for example, Hayat ibn Shuraih. Ibn Wahab, who is Ibn Wahab? Ibn Wahab is a student of Imam Malik. He was very young, Ibn Wahab, and he traveled all the way from Egypt to... Are you awake with me? I'm seeing people scratch, Ibn Wahab, you might as well tell us another joke. No, please focus with me. Ibn Wahab is a great, you'll love him, this person. Great scholar. He went and resided in Medina just to meet Imam Malik. And he says something that is fascinating. He said, I resided with Imam Malik for 20 years. 1 year I learned from Imam Malik hadith. And 19 years I learned manners from Imam Malik. This is the relationship that I am telling you that links students to teachers. And what does he say? He says, and I wished that the 20 years were just learning manners. Sleep over this for a couple of weeks and think about it. Ibn Wahab, I don't want to talk too much about Ibn Wahab because we are not concerned with Ibn Wahab, but Hayat Ibn Shuraih. Anyway, Ibn Wahab became a great scholar of Egypt, Maliki Madhab. He says about Hayat Ibn Shuraih, the Sheikh of Imam Bukhari, you see the inheritance of generations, how they inherit values. Ibn Wahab sees Malik, and then Ibn Wahab reports that he sees Hayat. Hayat then interacts with Bukhari. Bukhari tells us, and now in Whitechapel, we learn about Hayat ibn Shuraih. He says, Ibn Wahab says, ما رأيت أحدا أشد استخفاء بعمله من حيات وكان يعرف بالإجابة. I have never seen someone who hides his good actions like Hayat. He never does something in public out of ikhlas. And وكان يعرف بالإجابة. He is known to have answered prayers. So don't make him upset because you can be in trouble. وكان من البكائين. He used to cry a lot. وضيق الحال جدا. Extremely poor, ومع ذلك من الزاهدين. He used to say, when people used to say to him, you are extremely poor, look at this good thinking of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He will say, الله أعلم بما يصلح عباده. Allah knows best why I am poor. He made me poor because Allah have destined that this is better for me. And there is a strange story about Hayat ibn Shuraih, narrated by Ibn Wahab. Hayat ibn Shuraih used to have an income of 60 dinar a year. 60 dinar a year. And believe it or not, like the story or not, he used to distribute all of it to the poor and go back home and have distributed all of it. Are you willing to carry on believing me? Okay? He would go to bed, he would take the pillow, and he wasn't a magician, and he would find the 60 dinar. And that used to happen. Karama. If you want to rationalize it, I have no chemical equations, or I can't prove it medically, unless I am like this person who have burned this oil and asked the... His cousin wanted to test it. So he actually took his income that he receives a year, and distributed all of it, which he never did in the past. Went back, took the pillow, and there is no money. So he went to Hayat and said, I did like you and I never found the money. فشكى إلى حيات فقال أنا أعطيت ربي بيقين وأنت أعطيته تجربة. I gave Allah with يقين and you gave Allah wanting to test Allah. توكل. الحرص على طلب العلم. Another theme, seeking knowledge. And this is something that he learned, Imam Bukhari, from interacting with other teachers. One of the teachers was Muhammad ibn Salam al-Baykandi. He was a contemporary of Imam Malik and he narrated hadiths from Ibn Uyayna, Sufyan ibn Uyayna, who was the sheikh of Imam Shafi'i. Sufyan ibn Uyayna was based in Mecca. And Muhammad ibn Salam al-Baykandi also narrated the hadith of Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak. You know Abdullah ibn al-Mubarak by now. He spent about 80,000 dirham seeking knowledge and helping the students of knowledge. Now this is not the issue. The issue, the fascinating issue about Muhammad ibn Salam al-Baykandi, which shows, if anything, the concern for knowledge, is that once he was in the circle of hadith, writing the hadith, suddenly the pencil broke. So he called in the circle. Anyone has any spare pencil? Don't do this at class, please, because people will laugh at you. And no one gave him any pencil. He said, any pencil for a pound? Any pencil for a dirham? Any pencil, sorry, for a dinar? And all the pencils were rained on him. And he collected all the pencils, and they were numbered hundreds of pencils, so as not to miss the hadith. Imagine, this sheikh narrates this story to Imam Bukhari. Muhammad ibn Salam al-Baykandi also, as an institution, showed how he should humble himself for knowledge. Muhammad ibn Salam al-Baykandi was the Shaykh of Bukhari, but he also learned from Imam Bukhari. And he used to give his books to Imam Bukhari and say, please, ya Imam, look at these books. If you see anything wrong, wrap it and write the right answer. So much so that students of Muhammad ibn Salam al-Baykandi went to Muhammad ibn Salam al-Baykandi and said, how come you are this great scholar asking this student who's a colleague of us, do and correct your books? He would say, هَذَا لَيْسَ مِثْلُ. This student, no one is like him. So imagine Imam Bukhari again, hears this, he learns that because you are a sheikh doesn't mean that you should be arrogant. Another fascinating scholar, interesting character, was Muhammad ibn Bashar. Muhammad ibn Bashar is a great scholar, he was also blind. He was the sheikh of Imam Bukhari. One day he was sitting in the circle and a man came and said, I'm looking for, like say for example, he's in Whitechapel. He says, I'm looking for Paddington Station. And Imam Muhammad ibn Bashar said to him, okay. And he's blind. He said, you get out of the mosque, turn on your left and then take the first right. And then he went. And he came back after half an hour and said, Ya Sheikh, you gave me directions and I didn't reach there. He said, oof. Oh no, not again, another idiot. So he stood up and he took him from his hand, a blind, and actually took him to Paddington Station. Muhammad ibn Bashar, you see, those were the intelligent people. Muhammad ibn Bashar never traveled outside Basra. He was among the shiuch of Basra. He never traveled outside Basra, which was abnormal. Why? Because his mother told him so. His mother told him, don't leave me alone. Sorry, with all due respect, it wasn't a lecture or a conference or a camp. No, it was an entire period where he can seek knowledge for another 20 or 30 years. He says, and this is what is fascinating about Muhammad ibn Bashar, he said, I did not come out of Basra until my mother passed away and I went outside of Basra, and because I obeyed my mother, Allah blessed my entire journey outside Basra and I collected more hadith than if I left disobeying her. Please write this down and go back home and narrate this story to your mother, if you are in good terms with your mother. And Imam Bukhari once came from Bukhara as a young boy, and Muhammad ibn Bashar was sitting down, was sitting in the circle, and Imam Bukhari came from Bukhara especially to meet him in Basra. In the circle, you would notice who is a stranger. Okay, he's blind, but the students will usually say there is a stranger. You will easily be picked up, as a stranger. So Muhammad ibn Bashar realized that a stranger is sitting in the circle. Bukhari says, فَلَمَّا رَآنِي قَالَ مِنْ أَيْنَ الْفَتَى. When he saw me, he said, where are you from? قُلْتُ مِنْ أَهْلِ بُخَارَ. I am from the people of Bukhara. I came from Bukhara. You came all the way from Bukhara? He didn't say this. This is my comment. Look at Muhammad ibn Bashar. This is a great sheikh. Bukhari was very young at that age. Muhammad ibn Bashar says what? And this is what I said to you at the beginning of the lecture, that when you are famous, you make the entire city famous. He said, كَيْفَ تَرَكْتَ أَبَا عَبْدِ اللَّهِ? How is Abu Abdullah? How is he? You came from Bukhara. How is Abu Abdullah? If it was you, you'd say, oh, by the way, I am Abdullah. I am Bukhari. You guessed it. He kept quiet. Out of humbleness. Out of tawadu. Out of self-denial. Some of the students recognized him. So they said to Muhammad ibn Bashar, Ya Sheikh, this is Abu Abdullah talking to you. He said, Marhaban biman aftakhiru bika mundhu 20 sana. Welcome, O you who I used to be proud of for the last 20 years. I am proud of your existence. I am proud that your mother brought you on this earth for the last 20 years, because he came when he was like 22, Imam Bukhari. Brothers and sisters, do you think about great people like that? Do you feel that because you have been born in 2005 or in 1982, you are proud because you are living at the time of Imam Abu al-Hasan al-Nadawi, who passed away a couple of years ago? Do you feel proud? Do you feel proud that there were lots of scholars that passed away during your time, but you never recognized how great they were because they were contemporaries, or because there were lots of rumors that undermined character, assassinated them? No one feels proud. This person has been for 20 years proud because he is living as a contemporary of Imam Bukhari. Now imagine, what effect could this have on you if you were Imam Bukhari? But being the humble one, these things don't matter that much. Imam Bukhari also learned humbleness because of his colleagues that were like him, equal on terms of knowledge, etc., used to attend his lectures and behave as if they were students. Someone like Abu Zur'at al-Razi. Abu Zur'at al-Razi, and this is no exaggeration, well-known muhaddith, Abu Zur'at al-Razi, if you want to go back home, forgetting all the names that I mentioned, don't forget this name, Abu Zur'at al-Razi. He was the sheikh of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, Tirmidhi, Nasa'i, and Ibn Majah. Look what he says. He says, أحفظ 200,000 حديث كما يحفظ الإنسان قل هو الله أحد. Shall I translate? I memorize 200,000 حديث like you memorize قل هو الله أحد. When Ahmad ibn Hanbal used to pray Nafila, and when he comes to the mosque, Abu Zar'a, Ahmad ibn Hanbal will actually not continue to pray, or will just leave the prayer of Nafila to sit with him. Ibrahim al-Khawas says, this Abu Zur'a, the magnificent, used to sit like a child in the circle of Imam Bukhari. I'm just trying to make you get a sense of how great the personality is. And the only way probably is to tell you about great people that compared to that great were not that great. Another sheikh, Affan ibn Muslim. Great scholar, great muhaddith, a contemporary and a colleague of Imam Bukhari. He says, and this is where service to society that I mentioned at the beginning of this lecture comes into the equation. He says, no one asks me for something, but I try to do it if I can for him by myself, if I can do it physically by myself. So if please, can I have some water? I will do it. I'll bring you the water. If I can't, then through my money. If I can't, then through my brothers. Please, Ahmed, find him an accommodation. You know, he needs a car, he needs a room, he needs a wife. Who knows? I will get the brothers or the sisters involved. And if I can't, he says, Affan ibn Muslim, then I will speak to the ruler. I will go to Tony Blair and speak to him about a brother needing an accommodation. And then he says, I will do anything to help that brother. So he helps brothers. He helps, he contributes, he is in service of his society. He was a great Shafi'i scholar. And he had problems about Khalq al-Quran. My voice has now disappeared, so I'll need a break to explain Khalq al-Quran at the fourth lecture. Suffice it to say that he was attacked by the government. They oppressed him. They used to give him money 1,000 dirham every month, but when he refused to say that the Quran was not created, they actually banned and stopped the money and said, وَفِي السَّمَاءِ رِزْقُكُمْ وَمَا تُعَدُونَ, and in the heaven is your provision. I don't care. But look what happened. He says, one day someone knocked the door and gave me a parcel of 1,000 dirham and said, يَا أَبَا عُثْمَانَ ثبتك الله كما ثبت الدين وهذا في كل شهر. O Aba Uthman, may Allah strengthen you like you have strengthened this deen, and this 1,000 dirham you receive every month, and left. Who is that person? We don't know. The same, probably the same person that gave Bukhari the money when he was eating leaf. There are amazing people, brothers and sisters, that did not care if you knew about them or not. That is not why they behaved like this. But if I wanted to be a little bit more materialistic, I would look at it from another dimension and say, well, this is the reward of someone who have cared very much for society, founded accommodation, wives, help with money to everyone, spoke to the ruler, brothers, etc. So why? When he is in a calamity and needs help, why shouldn't society? Why shouldn't an individual? Why shouldn't a beneficiary of the services that he did for the last 40 years offer him 1,000 dirham every month? Why not? If you live for the people will live for you. If you provide services to society, when you fall, when you are crippled, you will not rely on the government for pension, because the entire society will give you that pension, will give you dua, will give you help, will care about you. But you have to first care about society. Final one. Ali ibn al-Madini is a great scholar, a fascinating scholar. And just a few days ago, I read a book that is about 250 pages about Ali ibn al-Madini. Ali ibn al-Madini is the sheikh of Imam Bukhari. Literally, the sheikh of Imam al-Bukhari. He was based in Basra. He was the friend, a colleague of Imam Shafi'i. He was venerated very much by Imam Ibn Hanbal. And when Imam Ahmad Ibn Hanbal venerates someone, respects someone, he doesn't call him with his name. He doesn't say, oh Ali, oh Ili, oh Lili. No, no, he doesn't do this. He says, Ya Aba al-Hasan. He will always call him with his kunya. Ya Aba al-Hasan. To show you how magnificent this character is, it's enough to know this quotation from Imam Bukhari. And Imam Bukhari did not say this to anyone, did not say this about anyone except Ali al-Madini. And by the way, al-Bukhari was not diplomatic, was not like selling praises for free. No, no, when he say, this is a muhaddith, by the way. When he says you are good, you should jump up and down and celebrate. If he says that you are acceptable, you should even jump up and down. If he says ignore you, you should commit suicide. So Imam Bukhari was that person of just, you have to spend 20 years behave yourself for him to say something minimum about you. Imam Bukhari says about Ali ibn al-Madini, he says, مَا اسْتَصْغَرْتُ نَفْسِي عِنْدَ أَحَدْ إِلَّا عِنْدَ عَلِي بْنِ الْمَدِينِ. I never belittled myself. I never felt that I am worth nothing in the hadith when I meet Ali ibn al-Madini. When I sit with Ali ibn al-Madini. Does this mean that Ali ibn al-Madini is greater than Bukhari? Not necessarily. Because Ali ibn al-Madini says what? And look at this humbleness. He didn't say, yes, you bet, I am better than him. No. He said, دعوا هذا. دعوا ها. Ignore him. Ignore Imam Bukhari. فَإِنَّ مُحَمَّدْ ibn إِسْمَعِيلْ لَمْ يَرَى مِثْلَ نَفْسِهِ. For Imam Muhammad ibn Ismail will never see someone like him. You will never see someone great than yourself. What more of an arrogant statement do you want? A lot of us think that I am the greatest, you know. But when someone say you are the great, يعني, and someone, يعني, someone not your wife or your... No, no, someone who is, يعني, sorry, well established in the field. And Ali ibn al-Madini used to always bring Bukhari next to him. And you now know the context of circles. Not everyone sits next to the... You remember the spitting image of Al-A'mash and spitting on that. So that situation happened, that Al-Bukhari sits with Ali ibn al-Madini. And whenever Ali ibn al-Madini narrates the hadith, thousands of people, he will always look at Bukhari and nod his head. Do you agree? Is it okay? Is that right? Do you have any problems, any criticisms? And if Bukhari keeps quiet, that means it is sahih. And when Imam Bukhari, by the way, for your information, when he wrote Sahih al-Bukhari, he did not just give it to the publisher, he gave it to people like Ahmad ibn Hanbal to read it first. So Ahmad ibn Hanbal got yani the off-the-record copy before it was published and translated into English. And then Yahya ibn Ma'in, you know Yahya ibn Ma'in, the friend of Imam Ahmad ibn Hanbal, and gave it to Ali ibn al-Madini. You know Ali ibn al-Madini. So Ibn Bukhari, his colleagues, his friends, his buddies, if you want, were Ali ibn al-Madini, and Ahmad ibn Hanbal, and Yahya ibn Ma'in. He had a decent mother, Ali ibn al-Madini, and there are lots of stories about his mother, but we don't want to go to that because we don't have much time. He used to take his little son with him to the circles whenever he... And one day, Ahmad ibn Hanbal was ill, so Ali ibn al-Madini took his son to visit him. And there, guess who you will find? You will find Yahya ibn Ma'in, the friend of Ahmad ibn Hanbal. So Yahya ibn Ma'in was there. And another sheikh who just wrote a book on Gharib al-Hadith. Gharib al-Hadith means the strange hadiths, the hadiths that are strange and need some explanation. Like if a fly falls into something, dip it in because there is one wing is illness or disease and the other the cure of that disease. Ahad hadith, yani hadith narrated by one person, narrator, from the Prophet Muhammad, so it's Yafid of Van. So he wrote a book and he is happy he entered to see Ahmad ibn Hanbal. So Yahya ibn Ma'in tells that sheikh, tells him, tell us about Gharib al-Hadith. So he says, حدثنا, حدثنا, حدثنا. So Ali ibn al-Madini is an expert in chain of narration. He's expert. You know, he's an expert in ilal al-hadith. We don't want to go in mustalah al-hadith now. You know, ilal al-hadith is what? Ilal al-hadith is the disease in the hadith. When someone says ilal al-hadith, okay, I am healthy, I look healthy, but I have a kidney failure. You will not notice that unless you are a doctor. Okay? You see, my eyes are yellow. You see something that... You have a kidney failure? Yes, I do. علل الحديث means that قال رسول الله صلى الله عليه وسلم خيركم من تعلم القرآن وعلمه. This is a sound hadith. But in the chain of narration, there is a problem. So there is a problem with the hadith. That to me and you, on the face of it, nothing is wrong. On a matin. The text, nothing is wrong with the text. But something is wrong in the chain of narration. Who was an expert on that? Two people. Bukhari and Ali ibn al-Madini. Asatida fil ilal. Ilal al-Hadith. When they say ilal illat al-Hadith, this hadith has got an illa. No, it's okay. The hadith is not sneezing or coughing. No, it has got a deeper illa. It has got a deeper problem that me and you will not see, or that our medical friend will never be able to figure it out. So, when that sheikh is the one who is talking about Gharib al-Hadith, started narrating the chain of narration, Ali ibn al-Madini said to him, skip the chain of narration. There are, in this room, there are more who are more expert than you. Just go into the matin of the hadith. You are not going to tell me anything new about chain of narration. I know, but this is my field. You are not going to. So Yahya ibn Ma'in says something fascinating. He says, Ya Ali, leave him to read the chain of narration. Why? So that your son, O Ali, benefits. Not for you, Ali, for your son. So Ali kept quiet and he began to say the chain of narration. Okay, these are the teachers. Fascinating teachers. Funny teachers. Beautiful teachers. Now let's talk a little bit about the students. And here I'm going to talk about three. Muslim, Tirmidhi, and Nisa'i. Imam Muslim was younger than Bukhari, was 10 years younger than Bukhari, and he passed away 5 years after the death of Bukhari. Believe it or not, if Bukhari lived for 62 years, Muslim lived only for 57 years. And we all know Imam Muslim. Now I know people who are in their late 40s who have no achievement in life other than buying a house through mortgage. That's the only achievement probably. But those people lived and died for their Deen. This person, Imam Muslim, venerated, was in love, was in mad love with Imam Bukhari. Whenever he sees him, he kisses his forehead and he says, دعني حتى أقبل رجلك يا أستاذ الأستاذين. Let me kiss your legs, O master of masters. Master of masters. So I'm nothing next to you. There are lots of stories about Muslim that I might mention at the end of the lecture. He died in a very strange way. One day, someone brought him present, a basket that is full of dates. And he was not at the house at that particular moment, so his family received the basket of dates. Basket of dates, we're talking like about 20 kilos of dates in that big, massive basket. So they left it, or the person left it in his house. Do you know where Imam Muslim was? Imam Muslim was having a debate with someone. And when we say in hadith debate, it's not debate, you know, Jesus is the son of God. No, Muhammad is his prophet. Not Ahmed did that debate. No, debate in hadith. You know, okay, who did Sufyan al-Thawri meet? You tell me. Sufyan al-Thawri met 200 teachers in Basra, and 20 in Baghdad, and 30 in Kufa. Tell me. These are the jadal, or the munazara, probably in Urdu as well. And they like it. It's not for the argument, does Allah have a hand or not. No. These were constructive munazarat, where it really ignites the mind and strengthens the power of the memory. So Imam Muslim, during the munazara, someone throw to him a hadith that is sahih, has no illah. You know illah now. Has no illah, has no kidney failure, nothing, no problem. And he became mad. How come I never heard of this hadith before? He went back home. And he said to his wife and his children, no one enters Dar al-Kutub. Dar al-Kutub is the house of books. He had his own library. Okay, this is to confirm that every muhaddith has his books. Like an Imam al-Dakhili. When he went to check the original. Irja' ila al-asl, Imam Bukhari was saying to him. So Imam Muslim wanted to just to find this hadith. No Google search, no anything. So he has to stay in Dar al-Kutub for days. Until he finds this hadith, because he cannot believe that for the last 20 years he never encountered this hadith. So it might be there somewhere, but I've never memorized it, or I forgot it. So he says to his family, no food, no drink, no one enters the room. They said, okay. Hours passed, and they brought him this basket of dates. They said, ya Imam, this is, we just received it 3-4 hours ago. You are not going to eat anything, we are not going to disturb you, but at least have a nipple of dates. And this is what is in the books, believe it or not. They say that he continued to eat without realizing, because he was looking for that hadith until he died. And there were people that were banned while searching a hadith. You see, they were at that time there were no electrical lamps. They were like lamps made out of oil and fire. So you are sitting with your turban, reading a book, and the turban is being burning from the like Imam Bukhari, the wasp. So the turban is burning. You might shout at the end when it burns your hair or anything like this if you have any hair. But other than that you will not realize. Imam Ibn Taymiyyah, brothers and sisters, on many occasions, he would eat without knowing that he has eaten. He would ask his mother, because Imam Ibn Taymiyyah lived with his mother. He never got married. He didn't have sisters. His mother was taking care of him. Okay, so at the age of 50, 60, he was with his mother. Source of pride. He wasn't shy to tell this to his friends. She would bring the food. He will eat it. And after finishing the book, he would write a book in one day. He would say, Mother, you haven't fed me today. She said, no, I have. Just an hour ago, you've eaten. He said, I didn't realize it. So Imam Muslim died, not out of hunger, but out of eating too much dates. And it happened in the seerah. Do you want a story in the seerah? For example, if you look at the story of how the Muslims, the Sahaba, thought about the adhan. Do you remember when they collected themselves and said, how do we call for the adhan? Some people said, let's ring the bell. No, this is the Christians, or do this. No, this is the Jews. One companion called Abdullah ibn Zayd ibn Abd Rabbu, great companion that me and you might not know or never heard of, but every time you hear Allahu Akbar, Allahu Akbar, this is Eid, sorry. Yani the adhan, remember Abdullah ibn Zayd, because he is the one that saw in his dream the adhan. So he came to Rasulullah and said, Ya Rasulullah, I saw in the adhan, I saw in my dream the adhan. And Umar al-Khattab says, Ya Rasulullah, I saw the same adhan. You know what this tells us? It tells us that those people, they were thinking too much of a solution to how to call to prayers. So much so that they dreamt about it. And we all dream about what concerns us. But what concerns these people was the adhan, and he dreamt. Now what concerned Imam Muslim was to look for that hadith, so he never realized that he has eaten 20 kilos of dates. I will end it with Imam Tirmidhi by saying that Imam Tirmidhi is a well-known scholar. He died at the age of 79. He's famous for Shama'il al-Tirmidhi, which shows the actions, the attitudes, and everything that concerns Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. He used to cry a lot out of fear of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Imam al-Dhahabi says that he cried so much so until at the end of his life, he became blind. Imam al-Nasa'i died at the age of 89. He was fair-skinned. He was powerful and strong. His students included people like Imam Tahawi, who wrote the famous book of Aqidat al-Tahawi, and Imam Tabarani, that you know, this great historians and mufassir, and Abdullah ibn Ahmed ibn Hanbal, that is the son of Imam Ahmed ibn Hanbal. He was beaten up, unfortunately, by the Khawarij. The Khawarij are those group of people that were splinters of those that supported Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib. They made takfir on the people of Ali, and they made takfir on the people of Muawiyah. They once caught him in Damascus, when Imam Nasa'i arrived to Damascus, and they asked him, who is better, Ali or Muawiyah? This is a trick question, because to them, both are kuffar. So who is better than, if you are intelligent and you want to escape death, say both are يعني, not good. Because otherwise you will be beaten up either. If you say Ali, you will be beaten up. If you say Muawiyah, so no escape. But this is a trick question. If you don't know Khawarij, you are in big trouble. So, but he was brave enough. He said, Ali is better than Muawiyah. So they beat him up until he was going to die. He ran away to Ar-Ramla in Palestine. And he was martyred in Palestine in Ar-Ramla, but buried in Jerusalem, which we ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to liberated. أقول قولي هذا وأستغفر الله لي ولكم فاستغفروه إنه الغفور الرحيم.
Message of Islam is a registered charity. We do not use public funds nor are they sponsored. Their aims are to better the understanding of Islam and to educate the public in Islamic culture and history. Message of Islam relies solely on Allah and then on books and product sales to fulfill their aims. Therefore, Message of Islam kindly requests for you not to make copies of the CDs.